With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Go loud. Magnified with Matt Cooper. Sponsored by Intact Insurance, the new name for RSA Insurance, and a new way to insure business with ease.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.
Hello, and we're back for a new series of Magnified with thanks to Intact Insurance. You may know Intact Insurance by another name, RSA Insurance. Now, there's a reason for the change of name. For brokers, this means deeper engagement and enhanced product offerings across personal and commercial lines. So remember the name. It's now Intact Insurance, and Intact Insurance has big plans for Ireland. It wants to be one of the top three insurers in the Irish market by 2030. And here on Magnified, we're delighted to be part of that journey. Our new series of podcasts follows the format of old for Magnified, considered interviews of longer duration than the format of radio and The Last Word allows me. For today's Magnified podcast, I decided to go to somebody whose social media postings pop up for me every now and again, and I always give them a read. He's a man that we had on The Last Word previously when he brought out a book, in fact, An Optimist's Guide to Ireland at 100. Basically, what he does is he puts out information about Ireland and where we are in the world, how we compare with everybody else. And in most cases, it tends to be really good news. So what got him interested in that? How reliable is the information that he's giving to us? Should we be focusing more on the positive rather than the negative? In today's Magnified, of course, sponsored with thanks to Intact Insurance, we're meeting Mark Henry. Mark Henry, thank you very much for joining me for this edition of Magnified. I'll tell you why I thought of you, because your material comes up on my feed, on my LinkedIn and on my X. And I interviewed you a number of years ago when you wrote the book about all the reasons to be optimistic about Ireland. And I see you remain optimistic about Ireland all the time. But it did strike me, sometimes a criticism that's made of media is that we're relentlessly focused on the bad news and we don't have enough of the good news. Now, I can understand why people expect media, you know, to hold power to account and to sort of focus on the things that have been done incorrectly and done wrong. And that's why we do it. But it does strike me as well that there are times when we actually have to give acknowledgement for what things are going right. Given that you're a psychologist initially by training, what's your assessment of that?
Well, you see, yeah, I'm on a mission because Ireland is one of the best places to live in the world today, by any metric that matters. Now, we can, of course, we have our challenges. Of course, we do. But yes, most people, by a vast majority of Irish people, say they are satisfied with their lives. We can dig into the figures on that. But they also think that most other people aren't. Why do they think that? Because the media consumption of what they're saying is, of course, what they're seeing, what they're reading, is, of course, a lot of bad news. Now, again, there's good reason for that. We'll dig into it. But it does lead to a misleading sense that, oh, Ireland isn't doing well. Ireland isn't progressing. We're going backwards. It was better back in the day X. And that's not true. Objectively, we are progressing well. We have our challenges, but there's no perfect nation.
One of the things I saw you writing about recently was the suggestion that we should measure happiness rather than measuring GDP. And I suppose people keep hearing about the economy is growing and GDP is up and GNP is up and GNI and all these various other acronyms that most people don't actually understand. But they've been conditioned to believe these are good things, and if these are going up, it's good, and if they're going down, it's bad. But do you think we should be measuring happiness?
Yeah, why not? Because isn't that the ultimate reason for that growth? Isn't that ultimately what we're trying to do? We're trying to develop the country in order to put people's lives in a better place. And, you know, we're actually doing a really good job of it, right? So the World Happiness Report, produced every year, Finland, happiest country in the world the last 8 years running. Ireland is 15th out of 150 countries. So we're in the top 10% there of countries around the world in terms of happiness. We're a good bit ahead of the UK, ahead of the US. And I mean, in a way, isn't that what we're ultimately aiming for in terms of all the policies, all the progress that we're doing in our personal lives and our work lives? So if we can grow happiness as a country, then yes, we are doing the right things. And in fact, you know, the blueprint for driving national happiness is becoming apparent. A lot of social scientists now, of course, are able to compare data across countries. We're able to look at changes over the decades and say, what are the things that deliver a happy nation? And Ireland ticks all the boxes.
How do you measure happiness? I mean, isn't that a subjective thing rather than something that can be objectively measured?
Well, yes and no, right? So yes, of course it's subjective. I mean, it is, of course, but isn't that the thing? We want lots of people to feel happy. But when we say happiness, right, it isn't necessarily, I smiled today, I was joyful today. Generally speaking, social scientists think of it in terms of life satisfaction. So, are you happy with your life overall, looking at your circumstances? You know, and in Ireland today, I don't think people would guess what percentage of Irish people say they are satisfied, fairly or very satisfied with their life.
Tell me.
98%.
That many?
98% of Irish people say this.
Where did that sample come from?
And this is, of course, the sort of thing people throw at me. Oh, you know, they must have asked X and Y, and, you know, didn't ask everyone. They did.
They didn't ask me anyway.
Exactly. That's the 1%. 1% aren't sure. 1% are unhappy. But, you know, half of us say we are fairly, half very happy. It's the highest of any EU nation. It's only 1% ahead of Denmark and Sweden. They're just behind us. You know, and why? Because, again, when you look at what contributes to life satisfaction, what makes a population happy? Economic development, because people then have more means to live a better quality life. That's us. A good democracy. We have a very functioning, well, democracy. Absence of corruption. We are one of the least corrupt countries in the world. A good healthcare system. Yes, we do. We are one of the longest living peoples in the world. A healthy natural environment. Yeah, we're blessed with that. I could go on. But when you look at the things that contribute to people saying, actually, we're living a good life, and I'm happy with where I am with it. It's not perfect. We all want to win the lotto. We all want to retire early. But overall, Ireland is doing well in ticking those boxes. And Irish people are feeling good about themselves.
I'm still very struck, though, by that 98% line. Because, okay, is it that the people who are unhappy with life in Ireland are more vocal and more likely to take to social media? Although, as I say that, I'm suddenly starting to think that maybe those who complain about things on social media are overseas bots. But leaving that aside, are people who are unhappy more likely to complain? Or could it be as well that there's an awful lot of people who aren't as happy, but they'll say they are if they're surveyed? You know, in the way that, how are you? Sure, I'm grand. And that can mean anything.
This is one of the things that's often thrown at me. Ah, yeah, exactly. People misunderstood when they said they were grand. They thought, oh, that's a very good then. to your question, are people online, the voices, more negative? They are. Which is partly why I do my best every day on social media, X, wherever, Threads, just to inject a fact-based, positive story about Ireland. Just a positive fact graph showing the trend, because we are very short-term focused. We tend not to, we have difficulty thinking about the long-term improvements in Ireland. We are, of course, reading the news in the day. It tends, of course, to be negative. We'll come to that for good reason. And the point is, people generalize, say, oh, you know, there's all these things. Yeah, sure, we're doing well. But what about, you know, whatever it might be? Generally speaking, when I'm contributing a story on social media, you get a fair amount of likes and it gets good traction. But the comments are overwhelmingly negative. But there's a good balance there. In other words, as far as many more people like the thing, tick the box, you know, click the like button.
Without making a comment.
Without making a comment. Those who comment, as you say, whether real people or bots or what have you, tend to be negative. But you know what? Sometimes they get people, you know, friends ring me up going, gee, because you see the amount of, you know, anti-immigration stuff that that post has prompted, whatever, you know, that's really tough. I don't mind it in a way.
Why not?
Because it's counterproductive for the people who are making the comment. In other words, the algorithms are saying, well, this is really getting a lot of engagement, and it pumps it up. It reaches a wider audience. The more people that pile on something, the more it inevitably spreads the good news. So it actually helps achieve what I'm trying to do, which is just inject a little bit of fact-based positivity into people's daily lives.
Do you get personal abuse?
I don't tend to. No, I don't tend to, which is actually, I think, good. People are playing the ball rather than the man, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, occasionally, but in the scheme of things, I don't mind. I actually had a chap just rang me. Just a guy, ordinary bloke from Cork, picked up the phone, rang me, said, listen, he said, I don't mind me ringing you. He said, I follow you and I like all the positive stuff you're doing. But could you just be maybe a little bit more balanced? Like, you know, my son can't get a house. We're struggling here with double income, you know. And I said, look, I said, I appreciate the call and I do appreciate the sentiment. But I do think there's enough balance. There's enough other people giving the other perspective online. You know, it's hard to find positive based facts and stories and news about Ireland daily. I'm just doing a small bit here, do my best to try to inject some positivity.
Why? What prompted you to start all this?
Yeah, well, look, as you said, I wrote a book, in fact, An Optimist Guide to Ireland, a few years ago, you know, based on the fact that we're coming up to our 100th anniversary of Irish independence. And when you look back, we have achieved remarkable progress as a country. Yeah, more recent decades rather than the early decades. But I go back to that time and, you know, what prompted me to write it around 2016, around 2017. It was Brexit times. There was chaos in UK politics. I mean, I remember being in London when the Daily Mail produced a headline, Enemies of the People, front page of the newspaper, criticising judges in the UK who said Parliament must have a say on this. Enemies of the people. I was like, good grief. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are the people upholding the law. Really driving polarisation. On the other side of the Atlantic, who do the Irish people typically turn to? To the east or to the west? You look to the west, Trump had just been elected, undermining a lot of the democratic norms. I said, you know what? It's time for Ireland, not on its 100th anniversary, to look to the west or the east. Ireland, on most metrics, is now better placed than the UK, better placed than the US. So we don't need to look there anymore. In fact, we've got to look up. We've got to look to the Nordics. Look to the Nordic countries, the Scandinavian nations, where we are typically well placed against when it comes to social or economic development. That's where we can learn from our next stage of Irish development.
But taking it on yourself, I mean, where did you manage to find all of the information? What did you have to do to investigate?
Yeah, well, you know, I wanted this to be very wide-ranging. And, you know, and so we should look at economic development. Ireland has come on hugely. Look at education. There's a great story of progress here. One of the most educated peoples on the planet now. Look at health. Oh, people give out about the health service. Wait a minute. We are some of the longest-living people in Europe.
What's our average life expectancy now? It's about 83, is it?
Yeah, 83, right?
Whereas generations ago, people were lucky to live beyond their early 70s, weren't they?
Well, yeah, you go back, as I did, 100 years, you know, and the average lifespan was 25 years less. We've added a whole generation in a decade. People living a whole generation.
In a century.
In a century. Quite correct. You know, but even looking today, 83, the average lifespan, the gap between men and women in Ireland is one of the smallest in the world. And we're only living, what is it, less than 2 years less, if you will, 2 years fewer than the world's longest livers, the Japanese and the Swiss.
So we're ahead of the Americans.
Yeah, by a few years. I mean, actually, during COVID, the average person was living 6 years longer than the average Irish, average American. So, and we live longer than the British do these days. So, you know, again, you think in terms of health, again, you think in terms of social progress. You know, there's any number of things that we should be proud of where we've got to. I mean, of course, there are challenges. Of course, there's more to go. And I put a chapter towards the end of the book with challenges for the century ahead. There are lots of things we're not great at. Of course, there are problems with homelessness, problems with housing, problems with carbon emissions. Yeah, Ireland is one of the worst in Europe in terms of carbon emissions per capita. You know, so there are plenty of things that we need to fix. But wait a minute, let's stop. Let's look back. Let's celebrate and what we've achieved and understand what's got us here, because now we need to nurture that to continue to grow.
Do you think at times do we in Ireland not look at what's going on in the rest of the world when we're measuring our own prosperity and our own happiness and things like that? I'll just give one example. Is there is no doubt, and you're not avoiding it, that we do have a housing crisis in Ireland. We have exceptionally high rents for those who are unable to buy. We don't have enough people perhaps in a position to be able to buy in younger generations. Amongst older generations, there's very high levels of home ownership, which is leading to tensions, I think, between generations as to, and could get worse in the years to come. But the point is that this is not just an Irish problem, is it? This is a problem all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, there is some irony about Irish people, young people going to Australia, when Australia has a bigger housing crisis and homes in Australia are less affordable, objectively, compared to incomes than they are here. Now, they've probably got more rental options. So, you know, but yes. Do Irish people tend not to look at a global picture? Of course they don't, just as most people in any country tend not to look much beyond their borders or perhaps even their city or their neighbourhood in terms of challenges. But like, I, you know, there's no blame in that. I think, you know, nor is there any blame on people focusing on the negative in terms of contributions on social media or anything, because there are some inherent psychological reasons why, as human beings, no matter where you are in the world, you tend to do that. I mean, I studied psychology originally. I graduated with a master's in psychology research and ended up going into market research and from there into tourism before I've ended up now in TU Dublin, Technological University Dublin. You know, when you look at the psychology of this, human beings tend to the negative. We've touched on the media. The media, I would say, yes, there is an overwhelmingly focus on the negative news compared to the positive. But that is what people want.
Because that's what sells.
It is what people click on, right? So to give you an example, a recent study that was done between New York University and a German university, they looked at one of these websites called Upworthy.com. They're one of these companies who produce those kind of clickbait articles that you see at the bottom of many a news page. And they looked at 20,000 different articles. Upworthy produced 5 different headlines for every article, and then they test them and see whatever gets the most click-throughs. And they had 5 million people clicking on these headlines, so they could work out what type of headlines delivered the highest click-throughs. The point is, every time an additional negative word was added into a headline, click-throughs went up by 2%. Every time an additional positive word was added to the headline for the same story, click-throughs went down by 1%. This is human behavior, right? It's humans. The more negative the story, the more likely we are to click on it. Now, there's good historical reasons for that, right? Again, years, ancestors, right, had to be on the lookout for what was negative to ensure their survival, you know. But we're past that now. But unfortunately, that mindset is still with us. So we tend to focus on the negative. And hey, look, people like myself and others are just trying to introduce a bit of balance. Say, wait a minute. And when you engage the rational brain, people say, oh, yeah, no, wait a minute, Ireland in the 80s was crap. So people do appreciate that if they're old enough to remember, but they do have to be reminded.
They do. And it's just things like, you know, at the moment, there would be an enormous amount of push by certain media outlets in relation to crime. And, you know, all these sort of crime podcasts and crime stories and feeding perhaps a perception that Ireland is unsafe, which is then amplified by those who are anti-immigrant, who like to try and persuade us that Ireland has become unsafe in a way that it wasn't unsafe previously because of the presence of others amongst us. Whereas the reality is, isn't it, that things like murder rates and assault rates and things like that per head of population are down significantly. Or am I incorrect in that?
No, absolutely. There's a global study, let's say it, that looks at the world's most peaceful countries. Well, it looks about every country and rates the most peaceful. Who would guess that they deem Ireland, based on crime and violence, as the second most peaceful nation in the world, second only to Iceland when you look at crime per capita. Now, again, people say, oh, well, wait a minute, the crime figures and this isn't reported and that's not dealt with. Yeah, sure. Maybe we're second, maybe we're first, maybe we're 20th. But in the scheme of things, this is a very safe nation. We are far safer, of course, than we were. There were a lot less people dying than there were going back to 30, 40 years ago when there were troubles in the north and those were spilling over to this island and our neighbouring island. People actually have a difficulty thinking far back. We have a difficulty thinking beyond a few years. I mean, I call it progress attention deficit. So there was a study again done by looking at simple thing, the weather on Twitter, where people had geo-tagged the weather tweets. It was in America. And people said, oh, it's really warm today. Oh, God, the weather, it's really freezing, whatever. And the point was, scientists in California University, Davies, looked at what the weather was actually like in that place compared to what it would be like last year, the previous year, and they went back 20, 30 years. People weren't commenting on weather that was unusual compared to the weather 20, 30 years ago. They were only commenting on weather compared to what it might have been 3, 4, 5 years ago. In other words, we really, as human beings, don't have the attention span to be able to think naturally about the longer term. We are very short-termistic. The lifetime of one government, right? 3, 4, 5 years. So that is, again, it's a natural human tendency. We have to fight against it. We're doing our best here to remind people that actually you look at the longer term, things have improved. Look comparatively. We are well placed. Of course, we have challenges. Of course, there are incidences of crime that are shocking. But we tend to learn from them as a nation and improve things.
I'm a child of the mid-1960s. I was born in 1966, so my memories are all from the 1970s onwards. Recently, I wrote a book about Dunstores called Dynasty, and what really struck me in relation to that was going back and doing my research as to how poor Ireland was in the 1940s and how moving through the decades, yes, there was, you know, ebbs and flows, but yes, things did start improving. But still, the 1980s, when I would have gone to college coming out of school, Ireland was still a very poor place. Ireland was racked by emigration. Getting a mortgage was an exceptionally difficult thing for people, despite a lot of the conversations we have now that it used to be so much easier to get a house. It wasn't necessarily, because interest rates were way higher and monthly repayments were such an enormous part of what people on lower incomes were getting. But it's all relative, I suppose, isn't it? It's all relative to how you're actually feeling now and how you can afford things now.
Yeah. I mean, go back to the 70s, the 80s, even into the early 90s, there was less than 1.2 million people in work in Ireland. And that hadn't changed. That figure hadn't grown since the foundation of the state in the 1920s. There had been no growth in jobs at all, which is why immigration was a thing, right? You know, and that began to change in the 90s, right? Only in the 90s, as the Celtic Tiger years began to deliver change in Ireland's economic prospects. In 20 years, that figure doubled, 2.4 million. Fell back a little bit then, the Great Recession. Now, a record 2.8 million people in employment. There have never been more people in jobs. There have never been more people in high-skill jobs. You strip out inflation, you strip out the cost of living, irrespective. Ireland, Irish people have never been wealthier in real terms. Stripping out inflation, stripping out taxes, our incomes now are twice what they were 30 years ago. So we strip out affordability, we still have twice as much income. We're spending on things like holidays, just to mention. Who was taking overseas holidays 30 years ago? Very, very few. Now people are taking 1, 2, 3 holidays a year, and it's expected. But that's because we now have the money to do that.
Well, see, that's interesting when you say that incomes are double what they were 30 years ago. And obviously for young people, that's almost irrelevant,
yeah,
in the sense that they only remember what they've grown up with and whatever. But it does, to a certain extent, answer the question, well, our incomes might be double or triple, but what have we actually got for it? Well, actually, what you've got for it is you're getting multiple holidays that, if you're in that position, now there's lots of people who are older and whatever, are not in the position. But the reality is we have more money on deposit in the banks. We have people taking holidays. We have increased consumer spending, which would suggest that for most people, things are going better. Yeah. But yet, that's not the narrative.
Yeah. You know, poverty is far lower here than it is in many other European nations. You know, far less than it was going back those decades. And again, I just think that's interesting, you know, because people focus on poverty in Ireland and say, oh, you know, and there is a sense of fairness, I think, in Ireland, actually, in the political narrative that isn't necessarily the case in other countries. And we can see that inequality is nearly a virtue in the US because it's the American dream to rise up out of it, you know. But the point is, we have a very, I think, fair narrative. We have a focus on community in Ireland. We have a sense of social justice that pervades our politics, I believe. I think that's helped by our voting system. I think it's helped by the fact that we have this multi-seat constituencies where people are competing in the locality for your vote, where we have proportional representation, where every vote does count, you know, and somebody gets a party gets 5% of the vote, they will, on balance of probability, have 5% of the seats, which means that our politics is quite close to the people.
Centrist in that it doesn't have extremes?
Exactly. You know, so two things exactly flow from that. One is that it has meant that our politics has not flowed to the extremes of left and right. It has reflected the views of the majority clearly. And it has produced, for more than 30 years now, it has produced a coalition governments, which again mean that lots of people's political perspectives have a voice at the table. And that centrist perspective, those centrist governments have objectively served Ireland well, because look at the growth in jobs. Look at our growth in employment, in education. They have sustained the model that has worked for Ireland of attracting inward investment, of investing in the education of the people, of in keeping ourselves open as a country to the talent that we have needed to grow. And that has served people well.
Is it possible, though, that as a nation we've become somewhat complacent, in that as our material circumstances have lifted for most people, not all, always conscious that there are people who are not doing as well. But as we've done that, then people have put a block on the change. They were not perhaps as ambitious as we were 30 years ago, or even if you go back to the 1950s, Sean Lamass and T.K. Whittaker deciding that things had to be done dramatically different if we were going to lift Ireland out of poverty and going to improve. And we had sort of spurts forward, a fallback in the 80s, but from the 90s onwards, ambition with things like putting in motorway systems, which we said, that's not for us previously. We invested in telecoms, we attracted in foreign direct investment. We were ambitious to do things. Is there a danger now that we've become complacent? And I'll give you an example of the complacency is that a generation that has done well is foremost in objecting to new infrastructure that we need for all of the new generations coming along afterwards.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, definitely the things that have delivered Irish growth in the recent past need to be nurtured into the future if we're to continue to grow. So that is things like this sense of fairness, this sense of equality, that this is this sense of openness as a country. There's no point in closing up now, you know, in any respect in terms of immigration, because that'll limit our potential for growth into the future. There's no point in switching our political agenda to the far left or to the far right, because that stability has served us well. Of course, there are things we need to tackle and new ways we need to tackle them. Of course, the policies need to evolve as the country evolves. But if we don't embrace that sense of openness, if we cut back, as indeed we have in our investment in third level education, then the quality of the people we've coming out to, and the quality of their education order, their ability to drive the country forward again, will be somewhat restrained. So I think, yeah, if you think about it, of course, we saw such growth. I talked about the doubling of jobs in 20, 30 years. We're not going to do that again. You know, we've reached a point where we're not going to see our incomes double again in the next 30 years. It's not going to be that extreme a transition. So as you said, people have grown up, let's say, since the last 20, 30 years, never saw that in their lifetimes. They're not going to see the same degree of transformation again. But we do need to continue to invest and nurture the things that have brought us here, support our institutions and the institutional capital that we've got in this country, continue to invest in the human capital in terms of people's education that has brought us this investment and this policy thinking that we've got, and invest in our social capital, making sure that as the country develops, we're bringing other people up with us.
You used the phrase there a little while ago. You said we shouldn't do things that limit our growth, but I thought growth was not the thing we were necessarily looking for, but it's happiness.
Because it delivers happiness. But I go back, you know, but again, growth doesn't, of course, have to be just in economic terms. It's health, it's education, it's the environment, it's trust.
But the environment, actually, because that's really interesting. You mentioned earlier as well that one of the things that we're bad on is that per head of population, we have very high carbon emissions. Mm. We are polluters. And it's one of the things that gets thrown back. And particularly on the last word, when we have John Gibbons, our environment commentator, on, is that many people do not want to engage in the measures that would reduce carbon output because they would regard it as having a detrimental impact on the quality of their life, that they would have a lower standard of living as a result of it. And this seems to be one of the major arguments, not just in Ireland, but globally at present, that there's an unwillingness to do what's required to save the planet in relation to carbon emissions because it will lead to lower standards of living. How do you get around that?
I think objectively that's not true. I'm sure John has argued this one well. But maybe just even one example, right? Ireland is, the amount of deaths in Ireland from air pollution is objectively really low. That's a blessing because of our geography, right? Small island, the winds are blowing all that pollution eastwards and for others to deal with. In continental Europe, of course, that's a real issue, actually. In some cities, even beyond Europe, massive issues with pollution. Just to give that small example, that the electrification of transport or the electrification of energy production will save lives, will reduce asthma, coughing, you know, all sorts of respiratory diseases. That's less true of Ireland, but it is still true of Ireland. Again, for those who can recall the smog over Dublin in the 70s and the 80s, when I used to, even into the 90s, when I used to be standing at the bus stop in UCD trying to get home after psychology lectures, and you could see the smog looking towards city centre. You know, that has gone, and actually that has reduced respiratory illnesses and death in Ireland, just to give a small example. So it is actually the case that by improving how we generate electricity and how we live our lives, there will be benefit. Now, of course, there's a cost. So how we manage to reduce the cost for people. But there are genuine benefits for people to be had, whether folks realise it or not, over the long term, it will leave us in a better place. And look, we import so much of Irish energy. This is costing the country. It's costing the country. If we can just switch to wind, offshore wind, solar, that will help us achieve those carbon reductions and help us become energy independent.
Yeah, but one of the things, how many more people now have cars in Ireland than they used to previously? And this is the conundrum in that people are told, give up your car and use private transport or public transport, and they don't want to actually do that. And yet then they're stuck in cars, which are stuck in enormous traffic jams all the time.
Yes. You know, and it's funny, right? This is actually slightly odd. We think we have lots of cars in Ireland, and we're a more rural society, and we must therefore rely to a greater extent than some European countries on cars. Believe it or not, car ownership in Ireland is less than the EU average per capita. It's actually quite a bit less. We actually have quite a degree of less cars, funnily enough, than other Europeans tend to, believe it or not. But yes, to your point, our roads, however, are perhaps not built, particularly in the cities, to be able to deal with much more increase in volume, because in fact, we are also not so good in terms of commuting times. We are one of the poorest in Europe in terms of the times it takes to get to work for the average person, unfortunately. But to your point, I mean, I don't think necessarily So, I mean, look, there's two solutions there, right? I mean, obviously, for people who are buying cars, yes, obviously making the switch to electric where possible is going to have a transformative effect, both on the environment, we talked about that in terms of pollution, but also in terms of savings themselves. Genuinely, I switched to electric January this year. I charged the car last night. I can actually fill it up at an overnight rate, the whole 100% for €6. And I can get 400 plus kilometres out of that for €6 for filling it up at the nighttime rate. So there are actually savings for all of that. But look, we can't take too many more cars in Irish cities. So public transport has to be part of the solution for quality of life.
A couple of other things I want to ask you about. I mean, you work now in TUD, Technological University Dublin. Although we have one of the highest rates of third level participation, is that necessarily always a good thing? Is it that we actually sometimes that we force children towards third level education, even if it isn't necessarily suited to them, and that they may miss out on things like vocational opportunities where the jobs may be in the future, particularly when artificial intelligence comes for even more white collar jobs?
Yeah, but well, I'm obviously going to be a fan of education. I mean, the Irish people, again, in context, we are one of the most highly educated people on the planet, right? So amongst those of working age, like from 20s up to mid-60s, the majority of Irish people have a degree or a qualification of some nature, a third level qualification. The majority, more than 55%. There's only a couple of nations that exceed us. Canada, I think South Korea's up there, Singapore. Like that's really it. Japan, I think. So, you know, we are really, really highly educated. But the point is that that can be an apprenticeship. That can be a diploma. That can be a degree. It doesn't have to be a third level, as in a higher degree, a master's or something. But I, you know, what would I say? I don't see a problem with that because to me that's equipping Ireland is a nation with the skills we need to develop, but equipping each individual for something they have an interest in to generate higher income later in life, because again, the figures are there, higher educated people are, the higher their incomes will be as a nation, we're seeing that. It's going to equip people for the personal development that they need into the future. But you know, the government has in recent years put a lot more focus on that. Doesn't have to be a degree. That can be a further education degree or a course, let's say a diploma or a certificate after your Leaving Cert. Then you can go into an apprenticeship. The number of apprenticeships is expanding to Dublin. We've doubled them over the last 5 years in terms of the number of people coming on apprenticeships. So look, I think people in the government are seeing the benefits of that. We know that for construction, to address the housing crisis, we're going to need more people qualified in construction. So that is definitely part of the solution. However, I would say this, the government investment in third level education per student is only 60% what it was in the Celtic Tiger era before the last recession. Because the government cut back investment to third level education, as it had to in the years of austerity, and the student numbers have kept going up and up and up and up. Of those now who are studying for their Leaving Cert this year, 7 in 10 will go immediately into some further education. If the government doesn't increase its investment and restore what was there, then the quality of that education, the quality of the skills that we're developing in students isn't going to be as strong as it was. And that actually will ultimately be to our detriment. So I'm saying, hey, more investment in education, but more pathways, sure, for all sorts of skill development.
Okay. And then you used to work in tourism for many years, marketing Ireland as a place to visit. Mm. Something that has come up in conversations I've had recently, and I think people are reluctant to say it for fear of being accused of a degree of xenophobia or racism. But it was something that used to be said in the Celtic Tiger era as well. And it is relevant as well to all of the visas that are issued for people to come and work in Ireland. We think a lot of the time about healthcare and we think a lot about technology. But the hospitality sector depends enormously on bringing in people from outside of Europe to work in our hotels, particularly like chefs, whatever, and people working in hotels. Has there ever been a sense of losing sort of the traditional Irish welcome if, when you go to a hotel, you're met by somebody from Lithuania or Poland, their EU examples, or somebody from further afield, not giving you the sort of traditional Irish welcome?
Yeah, as you say, I was in Tourism Ireland, the Oil Ireland body promoting the island of Ireland overseas in terms of generating tourism. I was there for 20 years, selling the good Ireland story overseas. Hey, and back in the Celtic Tiger era, that was being well written about as well. Because look, the context is, it is true that although people don't come to Ireland on holiday to meet Irish people, that's not a reason that they come here. It is the number one thing they say when they leave. You know, what was great about your holiday? The Irish people. Oh, they're really friendly. They're engaging. They're inquisitive. They're curious. I they really wanted to know about me, where I spoke. You know, I learned a lot. So that degree of engagement actually is still true. And people do still say that. I go back to the Celtic Tiger era. Yeah, you say that. It was very much a concern in the industry. Oh, my goodness, because it used to be 100% Irish staffed. And then all of a sudden, the front desk wasn't. The cleaning staff weren't. Maybe the bar staff weren't. And this was a big concern. But the research still showed no deterioration in people saying that that was still, the Irish welcome was still the thing that they found strongly, uniquely and differentiating about Ireland. And it remains the case because it doesn't have to be everywhere you go. So the barman may not be or maybe Irish, but when you sit down then next to somebody else in the bar or, you know, the restaurant and they're Irish and they're turning to you and they're talking to you, or the tour guide, down in the, wherever it might be, the Guinness Storehouse or the bus trip around the Ring of Kerry can give you that experience, you know, and can be engaging with you, or it could be the shopkeeper. So it still is enough engagement. And also, of course, many of these staff learn to engage differently, learn the Irish expectation of how they might treat customers is differently, perhaps, than where they came from. So no, that still is a really positive thing about Ireland. Now, I always struggled with this when I was in tourism, because you couldn't promote it. It just could say, oh, the Irish are really friendly, come and meet us, didn't convince people that was where they were going to go for their holiday. But it still is one of our USPs as a destination. And I think, look, that's evidence of something strong about Ireland. That's evidence about our sense of community, how we engage with each other. And Ireland is one of the most trusting nations in the world. We trust each other and we trust others. And that's actually a really significant part of our success, I'd argue.
To finish, you're remarkably positive and optimistic about Ireland. Is that just your personal nature?
Oh, I don't know about that. Well, actually, I'm not sure. I'm doing my best, Matt, to just give people a little bit of perspective. A little bit of perspective. Because going back to why I started down this path, I've been selling Ireland, tourism-wise, internationally for 20 years. That was a great thing. And objectively, you look at other places and say, we have a great story to tell. You look at our history and say, we've come through and places that, you know, dark times, we're in a good place. But hey, that's psychology. We don't tend to recognize that. That's not the topic of the conversations that we're having over dinner or in the pub. And actually, occasionally, it should be. Because if we don't have that conversation, it leads us to make poor choices, actually, politically in our personal lives. We actually need to have that bigger picture every now and again, remind ourselves that we're doing well, and then we'll make wiser choices about Ireland's future and our personal future. And hey, if I could do some bit, a small contribution towards helping people down a wiser path, listen, I'm going to make the case for that.
Mark Henry, thank you for joining us on Magnified.
Thanks.
Magnified with Matt Cooper, sponsored by Intact Insurance, the new name for RSA Insurance, offering personal and commercial cover with ease.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.